Live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, here we go, 4 o'clock hour. It's brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. We're actually at the Battleborn Broadcast Center today. Our hour in Reno, Northern Nevada, every day presented by Battleborn. 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Number 775 in the north, 775-766-1400. Boy, one of these Reno hours, probably tomorrow, this is not going to be another, it's going to be another moment of us not being nice. I don't understand what Jeff Choate was talking about the other day when he was trying to put a positive spin on the transfer portal and guys leaving.
We're developing guys for the big programs.
All right. But in doing so, he was kind of like dogging guys, like was trying to build a positive, but was also kind of like, hey, this is what they were when they got here. Like, okay.
Yeah, come here. We'll turn you in. We'll make you something so that a big school will want you. If you're not enough yet.
Seems antithetical to
his whole
what
rant,
you're trying to do.
All of his rants this year, like the whole rant about the UNLV haves and have-nots.
I mean, he's good for us.
Sure.
In the media.
Sure.
But this one of all the, because that was so local that the rest of the country didn't care about, Reno, haves, have-nots, Vegas has everything. No one cares.
He's driving his F-150 to Costco.
This one, it's blown up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think people understand that's where college sports are, but to actually say it out loud, I think there are people on this level of college sports who want to push that, who want that to be the, the drawing card. And they won't say it out loud, but I think for him to say it out loud.
So you give him credit.
Maybe. I mean, I think you're you're accepting what you are at that point.
Yeah.
But I think there are people that would want to do that, but they're like, oh, we can't say that. You can't say it out loud because then you're diminishing your product. Why would people want to come watch your games? Like why do people watch your games on TV? Why would they come to your games if you're saying we're just a minor league system for the bigger programs? Like that doesn't make that much sense. But for him to say it, I mean, I think it's probably a good pitch behind the scenes and maybe not publicly.
Big Four time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
So we barely got to all the storylines around USC and this last card with ESPN, last pay-per-view card with ESPN. There is a card to open up the Paramount era. These cards will be on a mix of Paramount Plus and some CBS?
Yeah, some of them will be on CBS, they'll all be on Paramount Plus.
Okay. This first one, though?
I think it is on CBS.
I mean, why wouldn't it be, right?
Yeah.
It's a good fight card. Very good fight card. I want to get to the really good fights. I do have to point something out. Is this all that Sean O'Malley has left? Is he now going to be, who's the other idiot who fights at 170? Colby Covington? You saw what Sean O'Malley did to Song Yadong. What are we doing? He went up there during the weigh-in with a mask on.
Yeah.
Song Yadong is Chinese.
Yeah.
Hardy har har.
Well, it's
Song Yadong responded like, yeah, well, guess what? COVID period was the last time you were relevant. So good.
True.
Good job firing back. I mean, that said, it should be a good fight because O'Malley clearly can do nothing but strike, which he's a very dangerous striker, but this guy wants to stand. So let's go.
Yeah, I think that's part of why, why he's on there. I know, Sean O'Malley is one of the guys that said he was trying to get a fight and couldn't. Because it seemed like the UFC was saving him for this event, this card, and that's I think there's gonna be eyeballs on him for sure, and people that are tuning in to watch him, and when they do, they'll see there's some other really really good fights on this card too. I mean, the co-main event is maybe the biggest women's fight in history. The main event is gonna be fun, whether it's warranted for being an interim title, which I would say it's not, but. They had to do that because they wanted to make that the main event, and so you can't have a title fight in the co-main and in a main event without a title, so that's what they did. I thought that they were getting into boxing to eliminate all the titles, but I guess in MMA it's fine to have as many as you want. So love an interim title, but I mean, I think the card is going to be phenomenal.
Kayla Harrison is a judo master, but well-rounded, not like Ronda Rousey. And give credit to Ronda. When she came in, she did grow the sport, at least on the women's side, to a pretty high degree. Kayla Harrison against Amanda Nunes, who's coming out of retirement. So that's a really good one. And then you mentioned Gaethje. I'm not saying Gaethje is... We just saw a gatekeeper fight on the slash card, right? With Henry Cejudo.
Yeah.
Gaethje's not there, right?
Well, he's better than that, you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, he still has a lot left.
Oh, for sure.
But he's going against Paddy Pimblett, Irish kid, who they want. I know, you know, they want him to blow up and be big. Speaking of blowing up, he blows up between fights.
He's English, not Irish.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's English. Yeah. So
I know you say they all look the same over there.
I know, but... I do. I say that all the time.
Yeah.
That's a good main event. And that's for another. Is it another BMF thing? Is that what it is?
No, it's an interim lightweight title.
Oh, it's an interim lightweight.
Yes.
That's funny. On Wiki, it's not even listed as a title fight.
Because it shouldn't be.
So whoever did the editing is like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, I think they're basically like, no, it shouldn't. Like
it does say underneath that it's an interim title.
Like I said, they did this because they wanted it to be the main event, and they didn't want a title fight to not be the main event, or, you know, title fight to be the co-main, and then a non-title fight be the main. They didn't want to do that. So they just decided to make it an interim lightweight title, which is ridiculous. I don't think people need a title to understand that a fight is big or entertaining or important, but that's what they did. And so we're going to have an interim title. But that's, you know, I think that just is a side note to the fact that it's a really good card. And in Vegas, T-Mobile.
Oh, even worse. Wait, that's an interim title at lightweight where that division has... I mean, these guys might not even be top 10 lightweights.
They're top 10.
I don't know. Some of the lightweights we've seen recently.
I don't know.
I'm getting way too little too deep on this, but that Torres kid on this last card?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah, there's a lot of really talented...
Two cards back, it was an amazing showcase for lightweights.
There's a lot of really talented fighters there.
The topic at hand, though, what is going to change going from ESPN to Paramount, aside from easier access? You still got to pay for it, but it's not going to be a $90 thing every time.
By the way, Gaethje and Pimblett are 4 and 5 in the rankings.
Okay.
So
I don't know if I agree
somehow,
with that.
But somehow that's a title. It's a title fight, for sure. 6 o'clock starting earlier, so that's good. But yeah, if you have Paramount Plus, you're gonna get it. Now I would maybe say buy it now. Get Paramount Plus now if you want UFC, because I, from what I understand, price will go up in 2026, and maybe as long as a commitment as you can make, maybe do that. I've often talked about my lifetime Peacock subscription. Because it's going to go up. There's no question. And they've already said it's going to go up. They just haven't said how much it's going to go up. So I would maybe take advantage of some sort of discounts or promos or something they have before the end of the year. It's not a promo for them, but I'm just telling you, probably try to save money. And, man, there is a lot of complex things. Maybe we can get into it with Justin a little bit later on, possibly. But there is some wild, wild things going on potentially in the streaming world. And it could go up dramatically. If certain things happen, which have a lot of political ramifications and other things, so I would recommend to, if you want to get Paramount Plus, to get it now.
Number three. So Winter Olympics are right around the corner, and we're still having issues with the venues, especially hockey.
Yeah, they're not sure about the ice, for one. They keep testing it and trying to figure it out, and they're just not sure it's going to be good enough for NHL level players to participate on the ice. But also, they've already determined whether the ice is good enough or not. The rink is too short. So they're already going to be playing on a smaller rink than expected, which could potentially lead to some safety issues if there's smaller space for everybody to get around. But if the ice isn't good, they're going to, you know, they've said basically NHL players are not going to play if it's subpar ice. We're not going to make exceptions. We're not going to say, oh, it's good enough for the Olympics. Like, let's put them out there just because it's so important. They're not going to do it. I would imagine if there's not NHL players playing in the Olympics, that they'll figure out some sort of tournament somewhere else to just play in instead.
On this short notice?
Well, the other team's already ready. Hmm. You just go and play in a tournament. But it would be... I mean, there's already not... game. There's not games in the NHL. They're already taking a break. So I would imagine they'll try to figure something out if they're not playing in the Olympics. But the gut feeling, I think we have these things every year with the Olympics, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's fine. We'll see how they work this out. But you know, it is going to be interesting if NHL players or the NHLPA is just like, no, not doing that.
How do you think Ovi and Kuznetsov are going to play in the Olympics? How do you think they'll perform?
They're not. Wait.
What's going on here? I did that on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Canada, Czech, the Swiss, France, Finland, Sweden, Slovakia, Italy, U.S., Germany, Latvia, Denmark. There's no Russia.
Aren't they banned?
Yes.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
They're banned. Look, I mean, the Olympics is about world peace and harmony. It's not about sports competition.
Yeah, sure it is.
So if you are currently invading a country, you probably shouldn't be allowed to play in the Olympics.
So those guys get off like 3 weeks. All the Russian players.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Partying it up.
Number two.
Number two.
Some players signing around baseball as the collusion lifted. Alleged collusion. Right? Gets real slow for a while, doesn't it? It's real slow. Kyle Schwarber decided to pass on the Mets 3 years, $120 million after a 50-homer year. And signs for 5 and 150 back with the Phillies. Poor Mets. Poor Mets. That one stings. You tried to get him and he decided to stay home, but I don't blame him. If I was in Philly, I think you might push back on this, but if I were playing in Philly, I wouldn't want to go play in New York. I think Philly's a better city to play baseball in.
They're close. I would say...
I think the media and the talk radio in New York is just abhorrent.
A potentially bigger concern is the fact that it sounds like they offered Edwin Diaz about the same that the Dodgers offered him, and he said, nah, I'll take the Dodgers.
So he passed on. So two guys passed on more money or the same.
Yeah, at least similar.
Ooh, okay, maybe there's something to build on with the culture of the New York Mets. Top story.
Number one.
So no one else in baseball could step up and get Edwin Diaz. So we're going to do this again?
Well, at this point, especially if the money's the same, wouldn't you just want to go win the title?
Well, you can win the title a lot of places.
I mean, you're a huge favorite if you go to the Dodgers. If a bunch of guys got together and
I
said,
just don't want to hear it this offseason when the Dodgers sign a bunch of guys and other teams are like, well, what can we do? Spend money! Try!
Well,
try to compete.
But I'm saying,
if we're
at a level where, and yes, they should have money and they should be able to spend, but if you're like, hey, we're paying the same or more, and they're still not choosing us, then like it's because everybody just wants to go play together. Like, it's just an all-star team. We're just going to go win a title, and they might not. It's possible to beat them, but you have a much, much better chance there than you do anywhere else. So if you are trying to pay the same or more, and they're still not coming to sign with you. I don't know what more you can do. I mean, I guess double what the Dodgers are going
to
pay.
Double it.
But if you're taking less to go there, I mean, how much more do you have to pay?
Is this offseason going to be filled with the Dodgers getting three or four more guys at,
yes,
you know, $20 to $45 million a year?
Probably. Yeah.
How is that possible?
I don't know. It's your Yankees from the 90s or early 2000s, whatever.
It's really not. That's the funny thing is you guys say that. There were still a lot of homegrown guys on the Yankees. Well, it's certainly not the Yankees now because they don't compete.
True.
Yankees all settled in the bullpen. They all good?
No.
They couldn't compete to get Edwin Diaz?
No. I don't think it was the money.
So now this is going to be the hook. Is they're just so good that everyone's just going to want to sign with them?
Yeah.
Come on now.
If you want to ring
other
chase.
Organizations have to try. You got to block the Dodgers. Come on.
We can come in and get the secondary guys.
Coming up next, we go behind the counter. We'll start to look at this week in the National Football League and a look ahead on the college football slate in the CFP with Ray Cleaver from William Hill. Here on this Tuesday, Battleborne Broadcast Center, 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada number to hook up with the guys here at Battleborne. You got to dial 775 in the north. Ray Cleaver is in from William Hill. What's up, Ray?
Hey, how we doing? I'm still getting over the train wreck I saw last night called Monday Night Football, so ready for an exciting week of football.
Hey, give me your take on what happened to the Eagles, and now how do you look at the Eagles the rest of the way in terms of power rating?
I think it was a pretty heavy decline. They have a quarterback issue. It's rather obvious, I think, even to players within that organization. They have a quarterback problem. Something happened to Jalen Hurts. He's not sharp. He won't run. He goes to his first read, and if they're not open, he starts to panic and then just throws the ball away. I kind of hope they make the playoffs because they're going to be a strong bet against. I think they got a lot of problems. I think a lot more. And the problem is they're putting a lot of it on Sirianni, and I don't think he's the problem. I think the new offensive coordinator, I think Hurts' lack of confidence. The players all want to be stars, and they have too many stars that if they were just a team and didn't care about their own stats, I think they'd be way better off.
Would you upgrade the Chargers off that victory, or were there some things in that game where you're like, man, they are not going to be good down the stretch here with this O-line and Herbert's health?
Yeah, I mean, Justin Herbert earned a lot of respect from me last night. I mean, he is one tough guy. Whether he handled the interview at the end of the game well or not, he just, I think he was in a lot of pain. I think they had him on painkillers. I don't think he won. But in all honesty, I mean, the Chargers just gave everything they had to that game, and now they go to Kansas City. I don't know if they can keep it going that way. I give Harbaugh a lot of confidence in the whole team, but they have offensive line problems. They have depth problems. They don't have a real attack on offense except Herbert. So, you know, he has a lot of the same skill abilities that Josh Allen does. I just don't think he can carry a team the way that Josh Allen does.
Thursday Night Football, you got some parlay boost already up for Atlanta and Tampa as Mayfield and Kirk Cousins, if they each throw for 230-plus pass yards, you're going to get that at 4-1 on a parlay. Bucky Irving, first touchdown scored, is 8-1. Give me your take on the side in this one as Tampa is favored over Atlanta, the number now sitting at Tampa 4.
Well, I'll tell you, there's two football teams that are not playing well right now. Tampa Bay, though, gets a lot of people back over the next week or two, and I think they'll be playoff ready come the time if they win the division. I mean, Carolina's not running away, and they play New Orleans this week, so you know, this is kind of a must-win with Atlanta, but if there's something I've learned over the last few weeks is must-win means probably going to lose. Atlanta can just ruin their season. It's the only thing they're playing for, and sometimes that's the most fun. They can let it hang out. I'm afraid I'd probably take the points, and the bettors are showing that because the line's dropped from 5.5 down to 4.
Jacksonville seems to have figured it out a little bit. Jacoby Myers looking good, former Raider in a Jags uniform. But can they cover 12.5 against the Jets?
And that line just keeps going up, Adam. I'm telling you, just crazy now how it's it was 11.5 shoot this morning, and now it's up to 12.5. I think it's a case of the Jets playing the zigzag. They play a good game, then a bad game. Well, if that's the way it has been over the last few weeks, they're due for a good one. I think we got a low scoring, obviously the total 41.5. I think we got a low scoring game here, and Jacksonville just needs to take advantage, get the win, get out of town.
Sorry, I have to interrupt for a second because I just got a flash score on my phone. How do you possibly, and sorry to change this, how do you possibly set numbers on Michigan basketball at this point? This team's beating teams by like 100. They're 30 at halftime against Villanova.
I know, and they beat Gonzaga by 40. I mean, it's just incredible that I find it funny that they're number two.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you watch this team play and rank them number two? I mean, they are just blowing everybody out. I mean, I think they're like a 5 or 6 against Duke right now. And you'd be reluctant to play Duke in that case. Yeah. I don't know. I just think that obviously it's been a heavy topic of conversation with our basketball guys, but Michigan is just on a roll. Now, it is only December, and we've seen things like this before. So let's see how they do when they get into Big Ten and start playing everybody in the Big Ten. We may have a similar conversation a month or two from now that nobody's going to touch them. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost 20 against Villanova today. They're up 30 at the half. It's nuts.
It's incredible.
Houston has also been a bit of a wagon, as they would say. The Texans' defense is incredible, laying 6.5 this week against Arizona at home.
Yeah, the problem there is that Arizona is just kind of like playing it out. I said before last week, my best bet over the weekend was the LA Rams. I absolutely loved them because, well, one, they had lost to Carolina. So teams that lose to Carolina are somewhat embarrassed and they want to turn it on. But Arizona, they've already told Kyler Murray not to come back. He's not going to play the rest of the year. In my opinion, I know the players want to play, but they are tanking big. They need a quarterback badly over the next season, and I play Houston there or nothing. I think 7-8 might be where it closes. It may even close closer to 10.
What do you want to do with Bills and Patriots? We're talking to Ray Cleaver from William Hill. Bills, Patriots, Bills are one.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that line out, I'll be honest. We put it at a pick'em when we opened and said, let the bettors decide which way to go. Well, we took some sharp action on Buffalo right out of the box. So, obviously, the line went to Buffalo favored by 1.5. I have a question, why? Why are the bettors seeing Buffalo? If Burrow doesn't throw back-to-back interceptions on Sunday, the Bills lose and are basically out of the AFC East race. Now they're in it. But New England's already beat them, and now they're going to New England, 10 o'clock in the morning, a 1 o'clock game there. Crowd will be absolutely rabid. And I'm sorry, but Drake May's not making the mistakes of back-to-back interceptions. Daddy Mike Vrabel won't allow it to happen. And I think New England should be favored in this game, and I think they're a strong play. I really do. I don't see much of Buffalo that gets me excited. They're not Buffalo of the past few years.
People are betting the Raiders, or they're doing something, because Philly's now down to 10.5, Eagles over the Raiders, total of 38.5.
Yeah, they're not betting the Raiders. They're betting anti-Philadelphia. Philadelphia could be playing the University of Wisconsin right now, and they'd be taking Wisconsin. So it's just an anti-Philly bet. Let it go lower and jump on the Eagles.
College football with Ray Cleaver in a second. Go ahead, Adam.
Or would it make any difference in the line if it's Geno Smith or Kenny Pickett?
I don't think so. I think in all honesty, you know, the betting has a lot to do with fan confidence. And I think if Pickett was starting, it might give him a little boost of confidence in that team. And I think Geno's wore out his welcome already here. The fans absolutely hate him. It's so obvious. They boo him every time he touches the ball. So I think that Pickett might give at least a little bit of confidence to the team.
Are you guys getting people betting CFP out of the gates here with these four games coming up on the 19th and the 20th?
Absolutely. We opened Texas A&M 3, went to 4 pretty quickly. A&M was heavily bet right out of the box pretty much everywhere. Now it's kind of come back. A few people are taking Miami plus the 4. So my opinion is it'll probably close around 3.5. Alabama, Oklahoma. First team to score wins. Alabama had negative 3 yards rushing on Saturday in the SEC championship game. Still gets in the playoff, and Oklahoma has a higher rated defense than Georgia. How is Alabama going to move the ball? To me, it's Oklahoma or nothing. Tulane and James Madison, just take the other side. Ole Miss beat them 45-10 in their earlier game. Ole Miss played Tulane. And the lovely committee set up a rematch in that game. And then Oregon at Autzen Stadium, taking an East Coast team traveling 3 time zones to play in one of the hardest places in college football. I'll lay the 21. I'll lay the 16.5. Play Ole Miss in Oregon.
And remind people, there is Army-Navy this weekend, 6.5 with Navy favored. And there are some parlay props. Check that parlay boost up there with Navy and Army. You know, I want to ask you one last question in the last 30 seconds here. Notre Dame, in the mind of many, got snubbed in this thing. At William Hill, where did you guys have Notre Dame in the pecking order in terms of power rankings? Were they outside the top 10, top 5? Where were they?
They were in the playoff. We were laying 4-1 on Miami against on Saturday morning. And we definitely had Notre Dame in the playoff. We don't know how the committee had Notre Dame higher than Miami, and then neither team plays, and we get screwed as far as Notre Dame got screwed of getting in. I have a bigger problem with Alabama being in the playoff. Alabama showed nothing the last 5 weeks of this season. Notre Dame blew everybody out. Miami played well enough to get in, but they didn't even play in the ACC championship game, which is two teams out of the ACC, and they get in the playoff and Notre Dame doesn't.
Hey, Ray, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right, look forward to it. Have a great day.
It was a makeup. The ACC tiebreaker screwed the whole thing up. Duke beat Virginia, and they're like, hey, we're going to do a make-good here and get Miami in, and someone's got to suffer. So Notre Dame is on the outside looking in. We'll build on this. Justin Watkins loves college football. We got a bunch of legal stuff to get into. Private equity, it's ruining everything else. Now college football.
It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, let's bring in Justin Watkins. We got a lot of college football to get to. We'll react to the CFP. Also, now that the offseason is approaching, all this money stuff is going to come back to the forefront. And we're not just talking about the greedy kids. You're going to see how ridiculous the money is around college football and trying to organize this thing. And if I ever hear anyone again talk about the players not deserving money, they're now going to be employees. So that is going to happen at some point. I saw something pretty interesting with a Dan Wetzel piece talking about booster insurance. As we're, again, the kids, we have to have insurance on the NIL with the kids. What is the theme here, or the story with Lloyd's of London backing it? Booster insurance when it comes to NIL, especially if a player gets hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea behind it is that there is some return of the investment if the player is hurt or...
One second. We're working on his microphone. There it is. Okay. We had a little trouble with the slide there. Go ahead, Justin.
Sorry. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the idea behind it is that, boosters that invest in NIL, let's say, like, legitimately they want name, image, likeness, but it could also be, true pay per play, that if the player transfers out or if gets hurt and they're not around, that your money isn't just lost. You get a return on it, either all of it or some portion of it. I think it's an important aspect to this because I saw a comment from Troy Aikman that mirrored almost exactly what I said on the show last week, which is like, dude, why am I giving money to a university to give to NIL, to give to one player for 1 year and then have them leave? And like, what do I get for that? I don't get anything. And so he's out on NIL. And at least if you're offering some booster insurance if any of those changes happen, I think we're going to start seeing multi-year deals. These players are going to sign 2-3-4 year deals. I think you're going to start seeing action against them if they transfer out before that time, just like Georgia's doing right now. The question is, are the courts going to enforce it and say this is a real contract, or are they going to call it what it really is, a pay to play, and has nothing to do with NIL? I don't know. The only entities that really can claim true NIL, in my opinion, are the universities, because they're wearing their brand, they're performing on the field, that it does increase the value of their own brand. Most other NIL deals are just a farce for pay per play. Although I did see like a real one. I saw an Archie Manning Ford truck commercial. That's a real NIL deal. He's a spokesman for Ford. I think it was Ford. But 99.9% of
money well spent if you're not sure what the
right
what the company is.
It was a truck.
don't rules like this, and I mean, I guess rules could work both ways, but I mean, there is some concern that opens up to, I paid for this player to come in and he sucks. I don't like this. Like, I'm going to try to get out of this somehow, or like recourse on that direction from them too, of I didn't get what I paid for here.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be a really tough sell. I mean, if they were expecting specific results, it'd have to be into the contract. And I don't think any university is going to say, okay, yeah, we're going to give you deliverables on the field in exchange for your booster money. Boosters don't think that way, right? They're so supportive of their schools that they're usually are no ties to the money, specifically performance ties. So I don't expect that, but I do expect we're going to start seeing an exodus of NIL money directly from boosters.
We'll build on the Aikman thing because I like that conversation, and you were melting down last week about Oregon State and your money. I don't blame you. I don't blame you. 766-1400 is the number to call at Battleborn Injury Alert, 775 in the north. All right. I was overjoyed about this whole license plate and registration enforcement, and now I'm starting to see unintended consequences. Uh-oh, maybe I was wrong on this.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Battleborn Broadcast Center. Justin Watkins is with us. We're going to get back to college football here in a couple of minutes, but some state and local issues to get into. Justin, of course, not only an attorney, but public servant in the past. And I always like to lean on him, and Adam does it as well. We start to get real angry about local issues. Okay, well, I was the first person in Nevada to say the license plate stuff was absolute lunacy, and it was about 8 years ago, and you laughed at me. And then it has turned into absolute lunacy. So now the DMV came back, and they're like, all right, you know what? If you want to report these people without license plates, you can. I don't know how you do that. You have to follow them, I guess, or if they park, you get their VIN number.
How are we getting their VIN number?
You walk right into
looking
the
into the
yeah, you look right into the windshield. Window. Yeah,
okay. Oh, I can do it.
All right.
Just snap a picture. Don't try to read it.
Yeah, yeah.
Send it.
Also, registration. Like, people aren't registering their cars, so you have no license plate. There's no registration. So there's some enforcement there. Then we see a story pop up on one of the local TV channels that someone had called in a neighborhood. They had called in one of these RVs that was parked on a residential neighborhood. So not only did they ticket the RV, they also went around the neighborhood and handed out tickets for registration. The sticker's not proper on the back. And the other one is, you park in your driveway and you're blocking the sidewalk, you got a big truck, ticketed them too. So now I've got some unintended consequences here that I did not expect. First of all, what do you think about them doing that in general, about enforcement coming out and then getting people on a bunch of violations, not just the one that was called in?
Well, I mean, I want the people to do the job that they're hired to do. And I don't want it to be selective, meaning one of the things that I saw Sheriff McCahill was talking about this week was, hey, we have too many fatalities on the road. We had this goal, zero fatalities. We're way above that. We got 266. We're going to start enforcing in these dangerous areas, these dangerous intersections, and having more of a presence. And my critique of that is we all know the roads that a lot of these traffic police get on where end of month comes, they got to hit their quotas, and they're just firing out tickets. And it has nothing to do with public safety, has nothing to do with cleaning up the roadways. And so I don't think you can have the first conversation without having the second, which is, tying the income of the courts to the ticketing of our people, of our citizens. And then when the real purpose is to make everything safer. So I'd say, right now, we have the job that these things are ticketable and they should be ticketed without selectivity to certain areas. So if you're in the area and you look around, your job is to write tickets, write tickets. Now, the bigger question is, should we be writing tickets in residential areas that aren't related to the HOA? Like, if it's a violation for me to block my sidewalk in front of my house in my neighborhood, why don't we leave that to the HOA? Right? The HOA is there. They're going to do it. If there isn't an HOA, then it's probably not against the law, frankly, depending on the type of neighborhood it is, because it might be a private drive. So I think the unintended consequence to me in their story is the people who are most likely to get ticketed are the less fortunate. The people behind gates are on private driveways. They're never going to get tickets. The people who are not in the more affluent areas of town are going to be the ones who get tickets. And ultimately, from a public policy standpoint, I want to know, is that something we want to do? And what's the purpose? What's the harm we are trying to prevent? And should we continue to do it? But as of now, it's the law. Do your job. Write the tickets. That's your job.
So it's basically like every other law and enforcement action.
I want them all.
Target the less fortunate and let the well-to-do go.
I mean, that is, I think, has been addressed quite a bit in this state, and I would say many Western states over the course of the last decade. We, for instance, low-level traffic violations are now civil actions and no longer criminal. There's no criminal record there, specifically because of these kinds of things. Yes, my point is I don't think it's right to enforce any laws selectively. They should be able to be enforced uniformly and consistently, and the payoff should be public safety, not funding of the court system.
Justin Watkins here with us, former public servant on some enforcement with traffic issues. I'm going to ask this. I don't have the answer, right? Because I don't live in a ritzy neighborhood like you guys do. I've never thought about this. Well, I did think about it when I was buying my house, that I wanted wider streets. I want the ability to park on the street. I see some of the new neighborhoods with like the mini driveways, and then there's no parking anywhere on the street. And you're like, I don't know what people do. In your case, like, you still have a big truck, right?
Yeah.
What do big truck owners do? Do you just say, like, I can't live in this neighborhood? Like, there are restrictions, because, again, to that point, I hadn't thought about it before. And I've actually seen this is another thing that pops up in my algo, where I see these big arguments about people blocking sidewalks and people getting pissed off the neighborhood that they can't walk their baby carriage or whatever. And these people have these trucks. Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, well, it won't fit my garage because it's too high. And the, you know, with the smaller driveways now, the length, it won't fit in the driveway properly.
Yeah. Well, so let me start by, I've always owned a truck. It's because I'm an outdoorsman, so I always need a truck. And before I ever owned my firm, before I was even a lawyer, I had a truck. And early on, when looking at places, I had to think about these things and have a harder time in finding a place, because some of, especially here in Vegas, the smaller little houses, like the condo type houses, don't allow you to park in the driveway. You've got to be in the garage. You cannot keep your car out. Nope. Well, it doesn't fit in the garage.
Yeah.
These garages are not real car garages, nope. Right? And there's no street parking. Or if you park on the street, you can't park on the street overnight. And so I my options were limited. I know I've got a truck and I've got to find the right place for that. You know, as I got a little bit older and as I got a little bit more financially stable, the house that I've lived in for the last 17 years, which is not a affluent house, it's a tract home, has a long driveway. That's it. That was one of the major selling points, is it's got a long driveway where we park multiple vehicles and we're out of the way. You know, I'm just now finishing up building a house, and there's no HOA on where my new house is. No guard gate though either. There's, you know, there's all that stuff. But
basically buying a house for your truck.
No, I'm buying a house so that, like, I can choose, you know, I don't have these situations where it's like, hey, you can't do that here. I can do whatever I want here. This is my land, mm-hmm. and that's your land. You do whatever you want right next to me. That's fine, mm-hmm. but I get to do what I want. No HOA. And so, yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is, you got a big vehicle. You're going to have some concessions you need to make on your living arrangements in order to accomplish that.
I actually think public servants need to be involved on stuff like this. I think it's gotten too far, and I'm not a truck guy, but I know Adam's whole point about wealthy versus less fortunate. It's anti-labor.
Yeah,
because I mean, there are a lot of people who have trucks. It's not just for style; it's their work truck. You're basically telling people, well, if you're a laborer, you know, you have to drive a truck. You can't live in this neighborhood. What is that?
Well,
by the way, in the state of Nevada, where we're still a freaking Western frontier state, listen to Jeff Choate, right? He drives a truck. He didn't drive the right brand.
Drives to Costco,
right?
But here, no, you have hit the nail on the head. I'm not even sure that you knew it. One of the very first cases I ever worked on was a case where an HOA was going after one of its homeowners, and because the CC&R said, you cannot park a commercial vehicle here. And he just had a truck, but it had a logo on the side because he was a worker. Mm-hmm. And they're like, that's a commercial vehicle. And we all know what a commercial vehicle is.
Sure.
It's a big truck, yeah. Right? It's a box truck. It's a tractor trailer. We all know what a commercial vehicle is. And this HOA was sticking it to this poor guy, right? They were like, well, you can get a magnet sign and you take it off every night and put it back on. But he didn't own the company. He just works there, right? It's his work truck. And so I agree with you. I do agree that the public's, the elected officials need to get involved in this. I would agree that it's beyond just that. It's that we should not outsource any small form of government to the HOAs and allow them to write any set of rules that they want and take our hands off the wheel. The reality is in the Western United States, the HOA takes over for a township on the East Coast. So you're from New Jersey. Any ever even heard of an HOA before you moved out here? It's not a thing, right? You got your local township. They go in, everybody votes, they make the rules. That's how it works. For whatever reason, we seceded that on the West to developers. We build these master plan communities. They hold on. They make all the rules. They write whatever rules they want. They write them all up, and then they turn them over after 90% completion, which can be decades. And in the case of Summerlin and Howard Hughes, will likely be my entire lifetime before it gets turned over. And so, yeah, I do think that this is a bigger macro whole area in which our elected officials need to get involved. And I tried when I was up there. I tried. Boy, I'll tell you, those HOAs come hard, dude.
By the way, I drove by your new neighborhood again the other day. I love it so much. Every time I'm there,
Did you see the house?
I don't know which one it is, but I love the neighborhood so much.
It's the best. Yeah,
oh, it's great.
What are you trying to get into a casita? What's going on here?
That'd be great too.
You want to move on to his property?
I have a house. I'm good.
Yeah, he just wants to.
I wish I bought a house there or built a house there.
Can you build a guest house just for Adam?
So a little cottage.
Hang out. The little cottage.
It somehow has views.
Yes.
Oh, it's got views of crazy
views of the strip. Yeah, it's great. So and the mountains. Yeah, yeah.
We're all about the worker on the show, at least I am. Headline. College ADs. Let me read it again. College ADs consider collective bargaining amid setbacks. Look at this. What have we been saying for a couple of years? All right, Adam, what's going on here?
I mean, this is something that they have fought and it's been like a never happening. We'll never support this. Now, like, whoa. I've been talking to a lot of college administrators lately for different things, and there's a lot of, I don't know. Like, I don't know what the future, I don't know. I want to be at the forefront, but at the same time, I don't know what's next. I don't know where we're going. I don't know what to do. Like, we need some sort of rules that are either, you know, it's paused now in the congressional one that the SCORE Act was going through. Now we're pushing it back because they don't, right? It was a one vote difference. They didn't know what was going to go through with the votes. They said, we're not going to do it right now. That was pushed back. Now all these other places are like, somewhere we need rules from somewhere, whether it's from a CBA, whether it's from somewhere else from above, there's got to be some regulation.
Can I break in right off the bat? If they do a CBA, right, and we're talking about employees of a university, then the coaches need to be under the same rules as the players, because something we talked about 15 minutes ago about NIL insurance, you know what? Schools need to start getting insurance, and these freaking fire buyouts need to go bye-bye. As a player, if somehow I can, be targeted for not delivering, then coaches need to be targeted. We're all under the same umbrella, but I have a feeling that's not the way it's going to be.
No, I don't think that's the way it's going to be. And largely, I actually disagree with you, because the universities aren't creating a set of rules against the coaches without any consideration, right? That the reason why they need a CBA with the players is they keep creating all these rules. They're like, okay, we own all of your NIL. You sign it all away. You can't, eat off campus. You got all the crazy rules that used to exist. You cannot accept a bagel from somebody else if they offer it. Remember how crazy the rules were? They make all those rules with zero consideration for anything that they want, no seat at the table. And finally, thank God to Ed O'Bannon for sticking it out over the course of a decade. The Supreme Court said, this is an industry. You can't create unilateral rules against the workforce. And so, we've been talking about it for over a year now. The only way this gets solved is through collective bargaining. I'm glad that we're starting to hear some positive feedback on that.
And there's no turning back now, because we're going to get into the conversation of private equity. Utah is doing a deal that could be worth like $500 million. That's it. The horse is out of the barn if private equity is involved. These are all employees. This is big money. These are mega corporations. Come on now. Justin Watkins continues with us. Adam Hill, it's Cofield, Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas, ESPN Reno. Stick with us.